guess if I were to get everything I wanted, it means someone else got nothing they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because that means, like, my neighbor, let's say I'm a Democrat and I say everything's going to be done the way the Democrats demanded it. That means I've taken everything away from the Republicans. They got nothing that they wanted.
Yeah.
And why would I want to live in a community where my neighbors didn't get anything they wanted? That would be miserable. First of all, I'd be a horrible person mm-hmm. for not wanting them to get any of their wants. And then also, how do we live in harmony with each other if I did that to them?
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stuff We Don't Learn in School. My name is Jenny.
And I'm Victoria.
And this episode, we will be talking about political ideologies, and we are joined with a special guest, Miss Emily Skopov. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm Emily Skopov. I don't know, do you want me to talk about myself?
Go for it.
Sure, I'm Emily Skopov. I ran for office in 2016. I ran as a Democrat. I'm running once again for the same seat. I'm running for the House of Representatives here in Pennsylvania. The district is district number 28. So that's the northern suburbs of Pittsburgh. That includes Marshall Township, Bradford Woods, McCandless, Franklin Park, and Pine Township. And I don't like to call myself a politician, in part because that never has a good sound to it. Most people immediately do not have a good visceral response to that.
That is fair.
But at the same time, I'm running because I would actually like to change that. I would like to start reinstilling hope in people that the people they elect might actually be there for public service reasons and to prioritize the needs of a community or whoever the constituents are that they are elected to represent. So I'm running to try and prove that democracy can still work and that really the ideals can still hold true if we can find a way to not be so cynical and also to campaign in that way as well. So that's, I'm taking democracy for a test drive, ladies.
I love it. I love to see it.
So that's my goal.
Yeah, and a little bit more background for those who don't know Ms. Skopov. She's done some really, really cool stuff before running. She's worked under companies like NBC and Paramount Studios and film, and also works in the nonprofit field with her nonprofit called No Crayon Left Behind, which collects gently used or untouched crayons and donates them to organizations for kids in under-resourced communities. So that is incredibly cool. And she's also running. So
yeah,
one thing we wanted to get into really quickly is when and why did you want to give democracy kind of like a test drive? And why did you want to get into politics? Was there a defining moment or kind of like an accumulation of different events and feelings that brought you here?
You know, that's supposed to be the question that everybody practices when you decide to run for office. You have like the elevator pitch of like why.
Yeah.
But I don't like to turn things into sort of ad slogans when I can avoid it, or things that sound canned and rehearsed. But anybody who knows me, it's an interesting dynamic. People who know me either think there's no way she's running for office, or they're like, oh, that makes perfect sense. It's one or the other, because in my wildest dreams, this was not something I ever planned to do. Like literally never, not once up until recently, because I tend to say what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tend to be very direct. I can sometimes be blunt, and I don't want to say it's a personal point of pride. I've always tried my best to be honest and not to be a hypocrite and to be transparent.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the best way to be fair as a human. I don't like to mislead people. And to me, politics never seemed like something where you could really say what was on your mind. It seemed like something where you had to self-censor a lot and you had too many agendas to serve. So it was really not ever on my radar. What I had thought was I want to give back. I always knew I wanted to give back. And from the time I was very young, I did things like help out animal shelters or things for the environment or things for children that were struggling in poverty. So I always had that desire to help people who were less fortunate, to help causes where there was a group or an organization of people who were vulnerable. Organ animals, things that are innocent and are somehow struggling for reasons that are outside of their control. That always greatly affected me. But I always thought I would do that through charitable work. So that was always like to me, public service was something I always wanted to do, but through charitable things. But it was not until, you know, in 2016, like I'm sure a lot of people, I became one of those people that was really enraged. It wasn't so much by the outcome of the race as just the way the race was going. And I did not like what I was seeing outside of the political world. I did not like seeing the rise in bigotry. I did not like seeing the rise in white supremacy, the hatred, the anger, the vitriol. Like, it, you know, I'm a mom now. I have two kids. You know, my daughter's a sophomore in college now. My son's a junior at North Allegheny. And I started feeling like, what world are my kids in now? You know, what? How am I raising my kids in a world like this? And it was getting so bad. And I was constantly just sort of muttering angrily. Like, I just could not every day, could not believe what was happening. Yeah. Like, it was a bad dream. And after the election, I was certainly stunned by the outcome. I grew up in New York. My husband grew up in New Jersey. So we knew who Donald Trump was. Let me just be clear. We knew who he was.
Yes. Okay.
None of us were like, we're not surprised to an extent about what he's turned into. Mm-hmm. We were just surprised that other people fell for him. But it was seeing the response of young people like you guys. It was seeing my kids. It was seeing especially like my son, which is pretty unique among his age group, is one of his only friends for a long time. In his group, he was one of the only Caucasian kids of all his friends. And as things got really heated, he would worry for, you know, when first they started, really when a lot of the racism started becoming really elevated, he worried about what were his friends going to be, what was going to be said about his friends. Or, you know, when there was a lot of anti-Muslim rhetoric, he was worried about that. So we just felt like all of a sudden, all these minorities had to worry in a way that I felt like, I mean, granted, almost every minority has concerns in this country.
But to a level it was
so much worse.
Yes.
It was so much worse. And nobody felt like the fact that nobody was trying to like silence themselves. I thought, how do you parent in this day and age? How do you make your kid feel safe? And I saw my kids and a lot of young people just being horrified after the election about what is, and scared. And I do not like seeing young people scared. And as an adult, I felt like, what have we done? You know, it's not your fault, right? What did we allow to happen? How did we create this vacuum that enabled this person to rise to power? And obviously I'm one out of a gazillion people, but I had to ask myself, what did I do? And more importantly, what did I not do? Where did I not step in to try and at least prevent this? Mm-hmm. And that's what got me to run.
Yeah.
It was really more just saying, I've always been a very big believer in, like, you don't have a right to complain if you have not tried to participate in a solution.
Yes.
Right? Like all those people who didn't vote and then complained after, you know, like, what? I have no patience for that. I'm like, yes. Shut up. Either do something or shut up. If you want the right to complain, you have to be involved. To all those people who may not vote on November 3rd, you need to be quiet if you don't like the outcome.
Exactly.
You don't get to have a complaint if you were not a participant. If you just let it happen and you're passive intentionally,
then that's on you.
It's ridiculous. And so I just felt like I don't want to be that person who just sits here and like so many people and just complains and does nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just a bystander.
Well, that's a long way. I guess I didn't have to go run for the state house against the Speaker of the House. I guess I could, you know, set my sights a little lower, but we did not have someone who was really willing to do what would have been required to run a really serious race. Mm-hmm. And I am not easily intimidated. I mean, and that's really, unfortunately, what it takes, especially in a district like this and with an opponent like that. You had to know it was going to be hard, and you had to be willing to have people say whatever they're going to say about you. You can't back down, and you had to be willing to work as hard as is humanly possible, because I knew it was still a long shot. So that's when I got involved. I mean, I guess it could have been a different race had there been a different opening, but I was never very happy with our representative because I felt he wasn't representative.
Yeah.
I felt he obstructed the democratic process in the legislature. You know, it's not about him being a Republican. It was never about that. This is a person who uses his position to make sure that legislation he doesn't like never even gets to a vote. And so let the process play out, right? Let people have their debate. And then what happens? That didn't even happen. And we are one of the least effective legislatures in the country. Like most expensive, least productive in the country, just about. And that's
really
unacceptable. And that's what can happen when somebody at the top has the ability to decide, I mean, really what even gets discussed. And that means nobody in Pennsylvania has a say. I mean, none of us have voices. None of us are being heard. And that's I have no problem with a fair fight. There was no fair. There was nothing fair happening in that legislature. So that's kind of how I got into this.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are now, almost 4 years later. So long road.
But still going strong. Stronger than ever, obviously. So you said one of your main motivations was seeing your children grow up in this climate. And obviously this climate isn't the best to grow up in, but there's a silver lining to everything. And I think for me, especially, seeing all this oppression and hatred has stimulated my want and desire to do more, even more so than it probably would have been if this had not all happened. And so I think that's just like how this climate has really affected me, my high school experience, and my ideologies. But I just kind of want to ask, how perhaps has your high school experience affected your ideologies or maybe guided you towards politics or something else completely different?
So sometimes I wonder what I would have done if I were your age now. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed by people your age who are getting so involved, who are like really incredibly knowledgeable. We have so many high school kids and kids in college on our campaign. It's just, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing because it's not like they're getting an easy load. It's not like we give them like busy work. Like they're doing real significant things. Like their contributions to the campaign are really valuable and really critical. And granted, we have a lot of incredibly smart, dynamic, you know, kids around here.
Yes.
But I would like to hope I would have been one of those people.
Who knows?
I feel like that's definitely. Maybe, but I mean, when I was in high school, I mean, the one thing that I think really shaped me in high school, I grew up in a pretty working class suburb right outside New York City. So even though it was really close to the city, and I went to the city, I had a lot of family there, and my parents worked in the city quite a bit, but a lot of my friends were first generation. So almost all the people that I went to school with, their parents were immigrants from Italy or Ireland and some from like Germany in that area.
Oh, wow.
But, and their parents really, I mean, they were the American dream. They were parents who came over and maybe didn't even go to college, maybe didn't finish high school. A lot of them worked, you know, really union labor jobs to give their kids what they thought was the American childhood. And they worked so hard. I mean, I can still remember my friend's parents. I mean, they were just tired. And I don't mean that like, but like, that's all we knew. So you didn't really think that much of it. That's what it meant. Like, this is what you do when you're a parent for your kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you want your kid to go to school and damn it, they better study. They better go to grades because you came over here and made this life and you're working your butt off to give it to them. We didn't have a fancy high school. It was a very blue collar school. We didn't have one AP class. Let me be clear. Not one. There were like almost no electives. None of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was for high schools not near us where the people had money, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but it shows you, I'm still here. I still got into Columbia University and got my master's at UCLA from a high school in a public school system where there were no fancy classes because you still got what you needed.
Mm-hmm.
And your work ethic was like critical. I mean, we learned how to work hard and you understood that this is your shot. You're being given this opportunity. Here's your education. It's like, you weren't being forced. It was like, listen, do you or do you not want to make something of yourself? Because this is what your education is.
Yes.
So have at it. Like, you know, because a lot of these parents did not go to college and they worked really hard manual labor jobs. And so it was like, look, if you don't go to college, you're going to be doing what I'm doing. And it's really hard. And I want you to have a different life with different, or if this is what you choose, but I want you to have choices.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we always got that education meant choices.
Yes.
It meant you will be empowered with choices and opportunities. And it's up to you at a certain age. None of my friends were coddled. We were not spoiled. We did not have parents who could go to every soccer game and go to every, like, the parents worked.
Mm-hmm.
They worked. My dad worked 6 days a week my entire childhood. Like, they worked. You didn't expect them to be at everything. And it was up to you. Were you going to work harder, weren't you? You know, sink or swim. And most of us did. But like, because we understood how important it was. So in that sense, I have always been a hard worker. I don't have any friend that I grew up with that probably isn't a hard worker. Like we got it. That's how you're going to, that's like your golden ticket, right? That's how you're going to get where you want to go.
Yeah. Yes.
But we also never felt like, are there things we couldn't do? Like, I'm trying to think if we ever grew up feeling like, and the two of you as young women might appreciate this. We didn't think about being women. Like, I don't know that I ever thought that was going to be a problem. It was like,
yeah.
Can I work hard enough and just be what I want to be?
100%.
In a weird way, that was pretty progressive at the time, I guess, although I wouldn't think of it as a progressive place. It was just a place where the only thing that mattered was hard work and like your work ethic and your integrity, mm-hmm. right? So like, I don't think any of us ever thought about like, well, I'm a girl, I can't do this. I don't think that ever was a factor. So in that sense, I'm also incredibly grateful for like not even thinking about that till I was well into my 20s, where I did start having, you know, barriers in my career because of that. I never would have not even tried something. I mean, it would not have dawned on me. So I don't know that I had a political ideology, but I had a very strong sense of fairness. Mm-hmm. Like all of us sort of believed in fair play. We were teenagers, not like we all did everything right, but we thought that there were basic rules.
Yes.
Like this is, there's stuff you don't, like you want to get in trouble as a kid, that's one thing, but like, you don't really screw around with major things. Yes. And you're fair and you have integrity. And I think like it was all, everybody was very direct, plain spoken. Like, I just feel like there was a transparency, a level of transparency that I so appreciated and that I think I have, that has carried with me and served me well all the way through where I am now. So
yes.
I couldn't even tell you if my friends back in high school are Republicans, Democrats, like, because there was just a certain sense of ethics and morals that whether you were one religion or the other, that I feel like we all somehow respected.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there was just some underlying basic moral compass we all kind of followed and knew. And I mean, it wasn't a whole lot of drama in my high school. It wasn't a whole lot of scandal. Now I say that, you know, I'm sure looking back, it was a largely white school system that became, I think, increasingly diverse in later years. So there's no question there were people who were not white who probably had a slightly different experience. And as someone who was Jewish in a largely Catholic area, I had a somewhat different experience. But overall, I still think all the things that I said largely, you know, held true, that people just, it was all based on merit.
Yeah.
And how you handled yourself, I guess.
To kind of branch off, you know, you talked about this belief of everybody having one moral compass. Do you think that's true for all Americans, or at least, you know, the voters that you've talked to?
That may be like the question of the era, because really, why do we all stop and go, what are they thinking? Like, I mean, sometimes like, and I mean, really, like, it's funny, but also I'm like, really, sometimes I think, mm-hmm. like,
what is going on
through their heads, right? Well, I don't know, because now it makes me feel like, are we all playing from a different playbook? Like,
yeah.
What is their moral compass? And they probably say things like that about us. Like, I'm sure that the people I disagree with may think the same about me. And I mean, on the one hand, I've had some great conversations with people that initially did not even want to talk to me. They'd say, oh, you're a Democrat. And I'd say, well, they'd say, well, I'm a Republican. I'd say, well, I'm running to represent you too. Like, it doesn't matter. Yes. I'm running to represent whoever lives here. And sometimes we have these incredible conversations and they think, wow, I didn't know you would feel this way about this topic, or we're actually more alike than I thought. And they're amazing. But then I have people who literally will just, no matter how I try, don't even want to give me 2 seconds yes. to talk, who automatically hate me, will say all these assumptions about me or all Democrats, like we're all the same. And it's hateful. It's incredibly hateful. And it's stunning to me, especially when I try as hard as I can to not, I mean, I'm really being calm and I'm trying to say, like, I just want to have a conversation. I want to represent you. I want to know. And I'll say, I'm deferential, and they still won't. And they're still nasty. I think there's something very like unhealthy. I mean, you know, I'm saying something not particularly like brilliant, but there's something really unhealthy that is happening. And I don't think it's hyperbole to say that. I mean, it is toxic.
No, it's so toxic. This polarization that you're talking about right now,
yeah.
I can tell you definitively that this has permeated down into the younger generations.
Oh, no doubt. I think any person your age who is like sentient and aware, I think we've got a generation of people who are going to have a fundamental sense of anxiety, possibly depression. And that's what makes me feel guilty as an adult, because there's a lack of security. There is no sense of security. You know, when I was younger, at least you felt like I can go home and like someone will comfort me, or I have friends. Like you had some place to go where you could feel comforted or safe.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like now it's not like people need, and I don't want to use the word like safe spaces, but it's like the world, when you literally don't know where North is anymore, when you don't know where there is there a moral compass? Is there a right and wrong? Are we now having to reckon with some people's idea of right is different than others? Like once upon a time, I don't know if it was largely Judeo-Christian, but there was some sense of certain moralities and ethics that mm-hmm. I thought we all largely agreed on. I don't want to say I don't know what's happening, but I'm hoping after this election, we can find a way to pull it back together. Like, I don't think we're beyond help, but I feel like it's starting to slip to the point where I don't know where we're going to end up after the election, because I feel like no matter how whatever the outcome is, I worry that whoever doesn't get it what they wanted, what will be the reaction? I don't know whether it will be, I'm a little, you know, I think it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about not only civil unrest, but I mean, I don't know where we go from there, right? I don't want to see us get worse. Like, if we haven't hit bottom, what does bottom look like?
And oh, no.
How do we in our own lives try to hold the line on saying there's one thing to be defiant or to say, or dissent from something or say, I don't think this is right. I don't know, but I worry about, again, I worry about the young people, you know, yeah. You guys, people younger than you, and we've got to do something. Cause I mean, on the one hand, we want to do what's right. We want to stand up for what's right. I don't think we should like resign ourselves to any sort of oppression or systems that we think are inherently prejudiced or wrong or malicious, but how do we then find a constructive path back to where we feel like we should be? And I mean, I hope that's what this process is. I mean, no matter what, can we give up on democracy? I hope not. And in that very dark sort of, in this very dark path we just went down, but as I said to someone today, I'm here, right? And I'm here in a race that is now perhaps in the handful of the most contested races in the state. And yet only a few years ago, I was being laughed at for even trying. So it tells you they're actually, your efforts do matter. And like, I got here because lots of people, and I didn't get here by myself at all. Like, I don't like to overuse the word movement, but a whole lot of people worked together to get this campaign here. I'm just the name and the figurehead. Mm-hmm. This campaign went from zero to major leagues. And that's a big, I mean, it's a big ass deal, right? I mean, we got the Speaker of the House out, and that's where we went from being laughed at to the Speaker of the House chose to resign and not run against me. And now we are one of the most watched races in the state. But that's just because I was able to be the mouthpiece for a lot of people who demanded better and demanded change. So it is possible. Like, progress is absolutely possible. It's not only possible, it's happening. It's just, there are a lot of different pieces moving and we have to try and, you know, have progress on a lot of fronts.
Yeah, what you said about young people maybe having this underlying feeling of anxiousness or depressiveness or just like not being able to find a space where they feel comfortable is really interesting, and I think it really holds true. I've had multiple conversations with friends, which I did not think I would have at all. I've always seen people talk about it on social media, like my peers and friends just post stories or their thoughts, but I've had the conversation of what happens when one group will win inevitably the presidential election and what will happen in school. And my mind like can't help but go to very like negative places. And it's honestly just really scary. And I think what you mentioned about also like spaces where you feel belonging, it's tough because usually people turn to people who are similar to find some sort of comfort and solace, that you share something at least similar and you have some sort of connection. But now that's even hard too. Like, if you're a Democrat, you might not agree with everyone in the party because there's so much diversity of thought, or even with your specific like ethnicity or race or religion, there's just so much difference also between in-groups that it's really becoming hard to find that underlying thread of what everyone wants. And this almost transitions to the next question, where we asked about moral compasses, but what do you think voters want? I've talked to a couple briefly, and I've talked to people in my like neighborhoods just asking whenever I've seen them, and it feels like people just want someone to care and be represented. But has there been any specific issue that people care about in their life that's sort of been a unifying factor, or has it mainly just been the sentiment of wanting to be heard?
You know, I guess when I started running, you know, I always say I'm running to be the kind of representative I wish that I'd had. What would I want to see? Like, if I were not running, what would I want to see from whoever was running, right? And that's kind of how I run. So while that sounds really simple, it actually brings in a lot of things, right? And what does that mean? What do I want from a representative? And so for some people, they do want to be heard, because first of all, if you're not being heard, it doesn't matter what else you want, right? Like, you could say, like, I want to worry about jobs and the environment, but if I'm not being heard, nobody knows that's what I care about. So it's being heard and being respected. And again, it's that willingness to still respect someone's right to feel differently than you do and to not judge them. People don't want to be judged. And yeah. I found that as a Democrat, you know, if I spent most of my time last time running, and even a lot now, even whether it's just by phone calls or texting voters, I mostly reach out to Republicans because they're the ones who will have the most inherent doubt. Like, can I speak for them, or will I understand them? Can I really represent them? And a lot of it is just when I reach out to them and say, like, I just tell me what you care about. What are you worried about? And I think right now, first of all, people are stunned when you say that and then you appear to actually mean it, like actually listening to them.
Yes.
That's still, and it's sad that that's noteworthy. Like, oh, someone's listening to my concerns. I mean, there were certain things that I heard the last time I ran as well, like people who felt like they tried reaching out to an elected representative, never got a call back.
Oh, yeah.
Never got an email. I've given out my personal cell phone number to tons of voters, like tons of voters. I'm like, call me, yes. Text me. Like, this is the job. Like, if I didn't want that, I should not be running for public office. And I'm trying to let people know when I say it, I mean it. You know, they want people who are not, you know, even if I say, you know what, I'm not going to be available between these hours and these, but the rest of the time I will. They are so starved for someone who actually says what they mean or who actually carries through on what they say. So right now the bar is so low. Like, it's so low that in and of itself is incredibly, it's depressing, but it shows that, like, there really is a lot of room for improvement. But in that sense, great, because you really, to like restore people's faith, first you just have to start by showing up and by caring. Like, and you can't fake caring. So if you're faking it, forget it. People know. People know when you're like rehearsing and giving them a speech and a practice response. Like, people have very high BS, like, monitors, for sure. They know. I find people respond incredibly well to honesty, even if they don't like what you have to say, because they also feel like you're respecting them by trusting them with the truth, like, or my truth. If they ask me, the number of times I've, for example, the folks who are pro-life, they will ask me my views, and I will tell them my views, that I feel that a woman has the right to, you know, make the same decisions over her body as a man does. That's it. That's my right. That's more or less my thing, you know, and anything to do with her physical health or her physical well-being or her physiology, women and men in this country should be able to make those decisions. There are times that they're surprised that I gave them an answer because it's obvious they were pro-life. They're surprised I told them the truth because they thought I would lie in order to maybe try and get their vote.
Oh.
So then they'll just be grateful. The number of times people say, like, I'm so grateful for your honesty, or I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
So it tells you what really goes on out there between people campaigning or candidates or elected officials. Like, I hope one day we can say, no, now people are demanding this, this, and this. Right now, the demands are really simple. It's like basic respect, courtesy, honesty, sincerity, because people understand without that, it does not matter what else they ask for, what else they care about. And as soon as they know that you genuinely care, then they realize they have a chance to maybe have their ambitions be set a little higher. Like, here are my goals for the district. I wish that you would focus on this. And they know at that point, if I say, yeah, I'm going to try on that, you know, I'll try to do that, that I mean it, like, I'm going to try. Or if I don't. So you have to establish that credibility by saying things that you're not saying, like giving them the answers they may not want, but they're just really grateful that you gave them the answer that was the truth. Because then when you tell them something they did want to hear, they know that's true. So I think building credibility is, I mean, I feel like I'm starting at ground zero in a certain extent. You're just trying to reestablish credibility for the process of like what candidates are and how people view people in the political process.
Oh, 100%.
So like, yeah. I feel like I'm starting at like the square one, like, can I get them to just believe that I'm really in it for the right reasons, that I'm really not in it for like power or whatever, and for personal aggrandizement? I don't know, because it's a pretty hard life. So I don't know. Like, I'm like, look, if I didn't want to run, I'd probably have an easier life. So
yeah.
Let's put that to the side. But really right now, because things are so bad, I think people just, they want to get back to actually worrying about other things. Right now, I think everyone's so focused on, can we just have neighbors get back to getting along with each other?
Yeah.
Like, Mm-hmm. And the good old days, you know, when Republicans and Democrats sort of good-naturedly sort of bickered a little bit and then went out and played golf together, whatever it is that they did. Like, those days seemed very, you know, it's quaint and nostalgic because now it's so hideous.
It just seems impossible. I don't remember a time where somebody of a different political party than I, you don't introduce, well, obviously nobody ever introduces themselves and like, hi, I'm a Republican or hi, I'm a Democrat. That's obviously not a great way to start a conversation. But like where there's some sort of malice towards somebody of the opposite political party. Right. And it's, yeah. It's really concerning because I've had so many great conversations with people of the opposite party. And then I realize, oh, we do share so many overlapping ideologies. And it's crazy because I feel like I've experienced and have been shown through media or through, you know, social media or the news that we're supposed to butt heads on every single thing. But I've realized recently that that just really isn't the case. So it's like, well, are my beliefs influenced by the news and what I think I should believe, or is it actually my belief?
I think that's true. I think that's what's so messed up about the nonstop news and information, like the constant flood, which I didn't have to grow up with. We didn't deal with that, where it really was 24/7. I think that is the problem right now. And that's where I sort of talked about people being defensive. I think right now everyone is like poised to fight because there is so much fighting going on that, like, for example, if I call someone or approach someone and I'm a Democrat, it's like they almost immediately put their hands up, like, I'm ready to fight because she's a Democrat, which means she's already against me. Like, before I talk, they assume I'm judging them. Right. And I found that, like, when I campaigned last time, I would go to someone's door who was a Republican. And of course, I know they're Republican. I can see their voter registrations, but like I would go to the door and as soon as I'd say I'm a Democrat, they're ready to fight. And sometimes they would be really nasty and they would like vent at me like all this crap. And I would just take it. I would listen. I would be calm. And it was like, eventually they would realize I'm not there to fight. Like I wasn't there to just go, oh yeah. And it's like, they would preemptively attack me because they thought in reality I was going to attack them. It was like this whole psychological dysfunctional like dynamic, but it played out over and over and over. And so I realized now everybody's just on the defensive constantly and figuring someone's going to attack them, so they're going to attack first. And so that is why I think it's happening. And once I would like, it's almost like letting people get it off their chest. They would say all these things, like, be really emotional.
Exactly.
And when they saw me just sort of letting it go, then they would sort of calm down and like be like, wait, she's really not here to make me to judge me. She's really like not attacking me. Like, and we could have a great conversation.
Yeah.
I would have to wait it out.
That's beautiful.
And so that is why I don't know that anybody, I think that's why I always say most people in this district are pretty moderate. They may like appreciate some aspects of, like, if you're to the right, you may appreciate some aspects of the far right, but I'm not sure you really feel the need to go there. Or mm-mm. I feel like they have to. Like, they could live with it if things weren't that far. And the same with a lot of the people who are on the left. They don't feel like it has to be as extreme to the left either. Mm-hmm. Like, there may be things about some of those positions they like, but I think they're also like, yeah, but, you know, my neighbors don't like that, and I just want to live in harmony with my neighbors. So, like, I'm okay being closer to the middle.
Yeah.
Like, I think people want that right now because, I mean, I legitimately think people just want something that, you know, they can grumble a little bit about small things. They don't want to fight about the big things anymore, but, and yet, therefore, all we do is fight about things at this heightened level. And it's like, I feel like it's almost like being in a constant warfare situation. Like, people are so used to battling all the time. They're just, they go into battle mode.
Yes, they don't know what else to do in that kind of situation anymore.
And I don't blame them though, because of our political discourse, like whenever we, I don't even want to say argue, but try to understand different viewpoints, we end up attacking the person and making like ad hominem arguments instead of actually attacking the idea and what you're trying to get at. And it can be tough because sometimes when you want someone to agree with you, you might make a claim that implies that they're a bad person if they don't agree. And then that makes it hard for them to be like, well, you know, I have these reservations about this because X, Y, and Z. And it just becomes this whole thing. And one thing I wanted to add about what you mentioned about issues and people in our district being moderate is really interesting. I was reading this one thing about what issues we choose to amplify aren't always representative of what people care about and the issues they actually want resolved. It's almost like I was reading this one article that says it's like we choose 10 issues in Washington that are constantly on repeat, but then the people in different areas have 10 other issues they care about that aren't on the plate or aren't as important. And one of them was technology. I don't know if that's the case in Pittsburgh or more specifically our district, but that was something I heard kind of being thrown around, which I think is interesting just to consider the difference between what the media or the political sphere talks about a lot versus what like common people talk about or just people who aren't part of that.
I think that's true too. I definitely think there's a, certainly I don't know to what extent, but there is truth that, because again, like what's interesting, what can generate money in, or like in some way, shape or form, right? What do lobbyists talk about? What do people in government talk about? And also I think they lose touch with what's going on in the district.
Yeah.
You know, some people in this district, you ask them what's the most important thing, it's flooding. They don't, there is not good infrastructure here for like stormwater runoff and stuff. Like a lot of homes here have serious issues. A lot of roads here have serious issues. That's what most threatens their quality of life now, especially with climate change and more rain, right? That's, if you could fix that for them, that would be a big deal. But I guess that doesn't sound exciting.
Yeah.
So, you know, but so when I asked, they asked me, you know, what do people in this district care about? I mean, sure, that is definitely an issue for a lot of the people who live in this district. One of the things, like I started a small business advisory committee. And one of those things, it's because I wanted to make sure that, you know, first of all, I think we need to do a bigger emphasis like on small business, even at the state level. But to me, what does that mean? It means working with small business owners regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in Harrisburg, and I don't know what happens when people get there, but, or at least our opinions, like, right, I still consider myself sort of like the average resident. It's like they go there and they're like some other class of citizen. Right, how like the power dynamic switches, because all those people in theory work for us, like we're supposed to be the bosses of them, right? Mm-hmm. They go there and they're like, oh, you're lucky if you get my time, like we pay you. Job is to answer to us. Like in what private sector job could you just ignore your boss? Like you'd be fired. So it's so weird to me. So like you have to stay in regular contact. So to me, it's like, if I'm going to go and talk about small business in Harrisburg, I have to be talking to small business owners here on a regular basis. And the best way to make sure that happens is to create a structure where I have a group of people who are still here every day running their businesses while I go back and forth to Harrisburg, because then I'm always knowing what is happening here on the ground in the district in a different way. I think it's really important that you acknowledge when you, once you go into government, you're not as living your daily life here.
Yeah.
But you have to make sure you're hearing from everybody what's really going on. And you have to stay in touch with people. You have to have those kinds of meetings, because how can you know what the people's priorities are anymore if you don't? And again, it could be something like technology. It could be something about the school. It could be like an athletic field. It could be some, you know, some kind of resource that the, you know, the community needs, but it might be really important to that community. Another community would say like, how is that an issue? So it, that's why I think we're supposed to have districts with someone who represents each district, because each district may have its own needs in addition to the ones that are more widespread and commonly held, you know, among them. So I'm already acknowledging like something must happen when people get to that job. And I'm trying to set up things in place so that if I win, I will always have people here who will keep me connected to what matters in all the sectors that even at right now, I'm trying to learn from people where they think the sort of areas for improvement are. And so what can I set up to make sure that I am always monitoring those and evaluating them and reevaluating them and hearing from the people who deal with them every day, what still needs to be done, what's good, what's bad. And, you know, I don't think policymakers should make policies without having serious input from the people who live those experiences. That seems to me, sometimes I listen to the things that come out of people in government's mouth. I'm like, have you ever talked to a teacher?
Yeah.
Legislators come up with stuff. I'm like, have you been in a classroom? The only time you did that. You know, it's like, I can't believe they're even allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to be part of the process. So I think a lot of it is just finding ways to always stay connected to what the job is supposed to be, because it's it is a weird job. It's, you're doing it for the people, but it takes you away from the district. So it's a weird, even though you have your office hours here, and we really should be making sure that there are always, you know, town halls and things like that. We should not be allowing our representatives to become so disconnected.
I completely agree. And I think in your campaign, you really emphasize like this connectiveness between Harrisburg, the capital of Pennsylvania, for those of you who do not know, and our district, and to not have that barrier. So far, whenever so many people think about politics, they think of like filter upon filter upon filter upon filter on all of these politicians, and what's coming out of their mouth is it true, or is it just something that they want the people to hear? And right. So you bring like a lot of honesty and hope to a lot of disengaged voters and people who really don't know what to believe. So our final question for you is, how do you kind of balance this mindset of giving hope to the people, but at the same time being practical and being realistic?
Yeah, I think in a weird way, that's a lot easier than it sounds. I think what I will answer the question, but I think actually the harder question is, how do you, me, whoever, give hope to people at a time when things are so dark?
Yes.
Because, you know, we're all human, right? It's not like I'm not recognizing how bad things are. Do I have my own moments where things are dark? And so how do I find hope in a way that allows me to then give it to other people? That's probably the more challenging thing. What is not challenging is, I think some people make this job harder for themselves. Like, there are a lot of things about this job that are hard, about running for office that are hard. As I said, what I have really enjoyed the most about this is when I do get to have those really honest conversations, even with people that disagree with me. And when we have this really calm, civil conversation, because that gives me hope every time. I mean, every time. I mean, I had that this afternoon. Like, I was texting with someone, you know, some people. And again, I'm only texting and calling Republicans right now. You know, I go through, you know, times in the campaign where I really focus, because again, those are the people who will have to largely speak with me or hear me to decide to vote for me. And again, I don't want anyone to just vote for me. I would like them to do it because they've been informed, they feel informed enough and have made that decision. Like, I like to say, I like to earn the votes. I don't want to just get them, because First of all, I think it's incredibly important, right? I take this job very, very seriously. Like, my job is to advocate for people so they can live a better life. My job is to help people improve their situations or solve their problems. Like, with the most basic and the most not basic, you know, the most mundane, like storm, you know, water and things, to the most sort of hypothetical intellectual ideas. But that is like, that's the public trust. That's mm-hmm. so sacred and serious. But when I can have a really human, decent, civil conversation with someone where we can like each other and be like, intellectually, I kind of disagree with you. I see a different perspective, but that's what gives me hope for all of this that's happening. Because I really do every day have conversations with people where if you didn't know, you'd say like, there's no way that person's going to be willing to talk to Emily Skopov, or no way Emily Skopov's going to listen to that person and have it go well. Like, and yet it does more times than it doesn't, because we're so tired of this. And we all are like, I don't want to be mad at anyone. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to hate someone or feel hated in a way by people who don't even know me or have never talked to me. And being practical, I mean, I don't know if everyone has a hard time being practical. Maybe it's because I worked in the film business where, you know, I sort of have used this analogy, I guess, you know, when you're writing a script or you're writing a story, and a lot of people don't know how the process works, but you know, you have a lot of people who feel entitled to their opinion. You may be the person writing it, mm-hmm. but then you've got the producer, you've got the director. Sometimes you have multiple directors. Sometimes you have people with, you know, multiple producers. You've got different people who are putting money into the film or the TV show. You've got some actors. So many people want to give their opinion. And sometimes you actually have to take a lot of those people's opinions and you have to synthesize them in a way to sort of address them in your story. And how do you do that, right? How do you take all these different people's opinions and find a way to be respectful? You can't take everybody's all the time, or their thoughts or their feedback, but you have to then here's a coherent story that moves forward. And sort of legislation and policy is not all that different. I mean, the legislation, the policies should be the roadmap for what we want the future of Pennsylvania to be. What is the story of Pennsylvania? Like, we're writing it. Here's the basic outline. We want to have it follow these guidelines and these principles and these rules. And you're taking all these different opinions and trying to synthesize them. So in that sense, I can have all the ideals in the world, but I also, I really hate not getting anything done. Like, I really do. I mean, I hate wasting my time. I am an extremely hyper-productive person, in part because otherwise I feel like I, you know, I'm sure I'm talking to incredibly hyper-productive people. I like to see something tangible. And so I'm like, I know that we could either fight forever and get nothing done, or I can, like, I believe very firmly in, like, some progress. You don't have to get all of it at once, right? And I think that's, like, as someone who's a long-term goal person, and I don't mean like I purposely set them, but everything I've done in my life that has really been important has taken a lot of time, you know, working my way up in the film business with no connections, no help, just hard work and just keeping your eye on sort of what do you, where you want to be. Sometimes I managed to move a few steps forward quickly, and sometimes it took me forever for one step, but as long as I was moving forward, I was okay. So, like, and that's the same thing, you know, with running for office, or, you know, I've been a runner since I was, you know, 13 years old, and you know, I like to run distance. Sometimes I run fast, sometimes I run really slow, but I know as long as I'm still putting one foot down, I'm doing something, right? Yes. I'm running. And so I'm still getting there. And I live in the, I like to say I live in the real world, but I think sometimes you can't just give the perfect is the enemy of the good, I guess. You know, it's sometimes you need to deliver solutions for people, because that's also, if people go for too long waiting, then they give up hope too. Then they give up, they want to know you're working, that you're trying. So I don't find being practical actually that difficult, because there's a whole lot of people here. I don't know why I would be entitled to think everybody has to, everything has to be done my way. That's absurd. I'm going to, you know, how many people live in this district? How many people are in the legislature? So, I mean, right now where we're at, where I feel like that's kind of the problem. People are like, it has to be this way.
It's like my way or the highway.
Right. It really is. Right. And it's like, it's so it goes no way. It goes nowhere. And so, like, the people get nothing, and they're paying you to go do something. Like,
yeah,
like, people are actually more reasonable. Like, they'll get it if you come home and go, man, I couldn't get everything, but I got a few things.
Okay, like, great.
Because also it takes the responsibility off me. Like, who really walks in going, I'm going to get everything? Like, you know nothing about negotiations. Have you ever made it? Like, people want to see something. That's the job. And then hopefully you do this. And people go, oh, you know, they were reasonable. She compromised with me, and maybe next time I'll compromise. And, like, that's how you also, like, sort of barter in good faith, or you negotiate, or you trade. And people, when they see you're willing to give a little something, maybe they give a little something. You just have to build that trust in one another that you're, because I guess if I were to get everything I wanted, it means someone else got nothing they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because that means, like, my neighbor, let's say I'm a Democrat and I say everything's going to be done the way the Democrats demanded it. That means I've taken everything away from the Republicans. They got nothing that they wanted.
Yeah.
And why would I want to live in a community where my neighbors didn't get anything they wanted? That would be miserable. First of all, I'd be a horrible person for not wanting them to get any of their wants. And then also, how do we live in harmony with each other if I did that to them? We have to understand, if you're choosing to live in a democracy or in a culture or a society where you're saying diversity is good, right? Not just diversity of what we look like, but diversity of thought and diversity of principles and diversity of ideologies, you have to recognize then you're not going to get everything your way. But that's part of the deal. That's what you're acknowledging when you say, I want to live in this kind of a system. It means, right, I'm going to have to give up some of the things I want because these other people care about other things too.
Yes.
So I sort of seeing it more as, instead of giving things up, I'm like sharing. Everybody gets a little something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to me, that's actually not the hard part. Right now, the hard part is that nobody seems willing to work that way. But I'm hoping, and I really think we're going to get to a place where there are going to be more flexible people in that legislature. I know there are people there now who are able to be reasonable, who are willing to compromise and work together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the leadership does. Although, I can't say that wholesale, but I think we can do better. I think we can do better than what we've been seeing in the Pennsylvania legislature. And we need people who are willing to compromise and collaborate and give something up so that their colleagues also get something, I guess, is the way I would say it.
Right. I mean, politics at the end of the day is just one large compromise, and hopefully you take the best of both worlds and you end up representing the people and giving, like you said, everyone a little bit of what they want. And
hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, thank you so much for coming on and doing this and talking to us about your thoughts, your experiences, and everything. And before we wrap up, is there anything you would like to say to voters, people in general, people in Pittsburgh and our district?
I would say vote, but I would say, you know, try not to be cynical, and everybody has their part to play in changing that. And so I'm not saying vote for me. I'm saying take the time to learn before you vote. These people are that you elect will make major decisions for your family, for your future. And don't just pick by party, truly. Look at the person, look at their integrity, look what they stand for. Take the time to ask them questions. Like somebody like me, I mean, I have met with every group that has been willing to see me, and including ones you might think could be diametrically opposed from me. They will meet with me. I will talk to them, because if you're not willing to be challenged, then you should not be running for office, and you have to be willing to own what you stand for. Because if you don't stand for something now, when you get into office, you will easily be pulled into somebody else's agenda. So, but all hope is not lost. I mean, I would say there are really a lot of good people out there. For as much as the people that are problematic are loud and it's sensationalized, there are a lot of really, really good people in Harrisburg right now. There are a lot of really good legislators. And I've met Republicans that I think are doing a really great job. There are Democrats, Republicans who are there for all the right reasons. And now I think we just need to get more people in there who can also support them and who can come in and really work in a bipartisan way. But the minute people resign themselves to being hopeless about this country, then we're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then we're done. I mean, it's not over. It's not done now. But if people give up, then it absolutely is. What is it? You can't win if you don't play. I mean, right now, if we decide all is lost, then we have absolutely lost.
Yes.
But I don't think we're there for sure. And I look at people like you guys, and if you just look at the young people who are stepping up and having really difficult conversations, who are willing to have the difficult conversations, who are using their spare time to do fascinating things like do podcasts with, you know, political candidates on a Friday night. You guys are making, I mean, the future is going to be what you make of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Like, no, there's nobody out there that's going to make your future. Everybody gets to make the future. We all get to be part of it, or we can sit back and let somebody else make it, and then you may not really like what you end up with. So we all have as much power as we decide that we have.
Yeah.
So, like, decide that you have power and get out there and use it in whatever way your conscience and your moral compass, you know, tells you to do, and stop listening to other people. Like, really just stop listening. And most people, if they listen to their gut and not a headline and not a something, would actually probably go in a way that feels true to their real beliefs. So sometimes you just got to shut out. You really got to shut out the noise, and it's loud and it's hard. But that's what I would say. I hope that's somewhat optimistic, because I mean, I am cautiously optimistic. I have not by any means given up on things getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Or I wouldn't be doing this. So, and I think everybody can really be a part of that. So I urge people to figure out what is their way of making things better. And then it doesn't, you know, however it is, it's 1 minute, it's 2 minutes, it's helping a candidate, who knows what it is, but it's everybody can do something small to feel like they've contributed to making things better than they are today. So.
Yeah, seriously, thank you. I mean,
yes, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, and talking to you has, I mean, right now I feel really optimistic. Like you said, cautiously optimistic, but hopeful, because it's people like you who show care because they've dedicated time and energy, and they're there when you need it, like physically or remotely, who listen and engage, that make everyone feel represented and belong and feel like the system is working. And, you know, in democracy, you can achieve great things and make progress for all people and help people's lives become better, whether it's on a local level or a national level or whatever level. So seriously, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You are very welcome. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak, and really people like you are what keep me inspired and keep me doing it. I mean, really, because sometimes you don't know if your message is reaching people. And also, I'm just, again, I just have a big mouth, really. I'm just like, I'm just loud, and I'm just like,
hey, loud and proud.
Right, loud and proud, and I'm willing. So it's, but it's like, but I'm trying to speak for a whole lot of people. And mm-hmm. and so I have to hear what everyone has to say and what their fears, their hopes, their dreams are. And then I go out and just try to put myself into service for that. So I'm thrilled, and I feel like I'm doing penance for the adult screwing up the world. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to clean it up every day. So, you know, so that you guys can go on and lead a better life. So my son can sit and play video games and ignore all of this, which, you know, he wisely is, but, anytime I'm really glad. I think it's awesome that you guys are doing this. There is so much stuff that we do not learn in school. I definitely didn't learn this. If my social studies and history teachers could see me now, they used to call me Lucy, like Lucy from the Peanuts, because she always talked a lot. And like, my nickname was Lucy in high school because big mouth.
And on that note, if you're over 18, get your mail-in ballots and be sure to vote. Go yes. out to vote. And yeah. make sure to follow Ms. Skopov's Instagram at Emily with a numerical 4 PA and our Instagram and sign up for the newsletter.
Yeah, at Stuff We Don't Learn in School. That is our Instagram handle. And stuffwedontlearninschool.org is our website. So just plug in your email and you'll be automatically subscribed to the newsletter. And so we'll end off with our quote. This episode's quote is by Mr. Jonathan Reed. It is from a palindrome poem called Lost Generation, and I think it's just beautifully written. So I'm going to read two lines, and then whenever you say it in reverse, it has the complete opposite meaning, and I feel like it's very fitting for this podcast. So the quote goes, I am part of a lost generation, and I refuse to believe that I can change the world. But if you say it in reverse, it's, I can change the world. And I refuse to believe that I am part of a lost generation.